We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, welcome back to the Fantasy Football Report. Here with Hassan Rahim, as always, and our special guest, Peter Howard. He's a writer for Dynasty League Football. You can find him on his podcast or his YouTube channel, on Twitter at PA Howdy. Peter, how's it going?
Pretty good, man. Thanks for having me on. Nice to see you again.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're one of the guys we've been wanting to talk to a lot. I think, you know, what we're doing at RotoViz is pretty, has a lot of overlap with the sort of stuff that you've got going on. So it's always fun to talk to you.
I steal a lot of your data, so that's kind of overlap. And no, I appreciate you lying, but it's okay. You got to the bottom of the barrel. It's week 9. Most people are busy, and I'm here for you. It's cool.
Thanks. There you go.
Before we do get started, do you mind plugging your YouTube and Patreon and what potential and what subscribers could find?
Yes,
I would. At either area?
Yeah, I would mind doing that, actually. That's not. No, I don't really plug. It's the stuff we do, right? We like talking about football, so we end up making a YouTube channel. Well, actually, I didn't. I just watch YouTube, so I have an account, and I figured there's an upload button. And I was like, oh, look, I did that. So in the off season, I just started making more videos, mostly doing prospect breakdowns, like what I look at, here's what I saw, here's what I'm going to get right and wrong. And then I tried to do some actual videos, like one on Myles Gaskin, which is looking good, or I have no idea, bad, no idea what Myles Gaskin is at this point. I decided I didn't like making professional content, then just went back to like live streaming and do it. Like, I get questions, you probably do as well, when you talk about numbers. People think there's some sort of mystery or they're hard to do. It's like, no, the reason I do them is because they don't require a lot of math. They're not very hard. And so I do explanations, how-tos, how to use Excel, anything anyone asks me about. In the season, I've been trying to do a weekly stream instead of like 3 weekly videos breaking down this, that, or the other, like mini articles. Some things I don't know how you guys feel, but sometimes like it's easier to just do a 10-minute video than write a whole article. Because when I sit down, when I'm interested in something, my articles tend to get months to research, which DLF is very kindly willing to wait for normally. In-season quick reaction stuff really isn't my thing. But every now and again, I have a thought about a specific event, position, or whatever else. And it's just easier to explain it verbally. And so that's mostly what my YouTube channel is. And then my live streams will stream there as well. Patreon, the way I bill it is, look, if you want to support what I'm up to, I'm really grateful. It's paying like my water bill right now. And I like water. I really like water. But I'm not charging for things is my idea. It's not like give me money and I will give you this spreadsheet. I mostly try and spit out as much free data so everyone can play and have fun with it as I can. But I do try and have a few things that are for Patreons only. Like, we've got a Discord, and I asked them, should this be open to everyone? And they're like, nah, we're like this is a little group, and there are people in there that can do more impressive things than I can. But we like talking fantasy. It's like a mini Twitter, basically. I've learned about Discord. And stuff like that. And we have a few databases we keep behind the high $1 paywall. But, I mean, mostly it's just if you like supporting my work, because at this point I'm working at like a full-time job, then I'd appreciate it. But if you just can't spend money on fantasy, just at me on Twitter or on Patreon, and I try and talk. I'll give anyone an opinion. Like, it's free. And I'll try and help you out however I can. But Patreons have a few links to extra databases and a Discord, basically. And they're wonderful and my heroes. So, yeah, that you can see why I would not like to do this. I'm not very good at this side of it. This is why I'm not I like to say this is why I'm not successful, but it's probably because I'm just not very good. I'm terrible at selling shit.
No, that's not true. And if you're watching this or listening, you definitely won't be...
I just realized, like, I'm spitting out at least 3 weekly articles on Patreon. I'm doing ranks, dynasty ranks, weekly projections, and I didn't mention a single bit of that. But yeah, there's some other stuff there. Check it out. Most of it's free.
And that's for a dollar, right?
Yeah, like, dollar a month.
There you go.
Like, you can pay whatever you want. Like, if you're rich, by all means, throw 10. But also, like, well, I don't know how you guys got started in it, but like, I should probably ask, but I wanted to get better at fantasy football quickly, and numbers seemed to be my easiest way to do that. And there wasn't a lot of, hey, here's a bunch of data. And so I've just, I just started collecting it, and then I just started posting it and on Twitter, and Patreon's an extension of that. It's not like it's hard to get. It just takes a lot of hours when you got a life and kids, and it's like, it's fine. I'll do the legwork.
Yeah, no, it's the same for me. I want to get good at fantasy football quick. And I didn't know anything about football. I actually really follow the sport until like 2015. And the only reason I followed it was because I got my first fantasy team that year, and I went...
Exactly the same.
I think I went like 2-14. Like 2-14, like that year. Like I completely destroyed. And I was like, I got to get better.
Yeah.
I'm probably good at one thing.
Pride, but I have more than this.
I'm better than this. It was an auction league, and I can tell you one of the crucial mistakes that I made was spending a quarter of my budget on Drew Brees.
I drafted Drew Brees first round, a single quarterback. 1 second.
Speaking of getting better. Trying to get better, we can jump right in to talk about Baker Mayfield. And you know, he was actually, like, the Browns were okay today. He's, you know, 21 pass attempts for 218 yards and 2 touchdowns. Peter, I was just asking about, I was asking Hassan his thoughts on Baker Mayfield's performance, who, you know, is somebody else we're hoping will get a lot better soon. Or maybe we're not. I don't know. I didn't draft a ton of him this year. But do you think the Browns can keep putting up 41 points?
Sure. As long as they got Nick Chubb, and then as long as Kareem Hunt comes past, Jarvis Landry's fine. If you're asking about Baker Mayfield, like, I don't know. I've stayed so far away from quarterback evaluation for so long. Like, he's fine. I think we always thought the ceiling was more, and I think it's long past time we accept that it's not. Not there. I would look like he's from back in the day, an underdog story. Wasn't he a walk-on originally in college and stuff? Yeah. Like, I love rooting for the guy who's not meant to succeed. And this point, he's an NFL quarterback, which is pretty freaking successful.
He's a 1-on-1.
So, but like, we're not waiting for the up here. He's good. He's, you know, he's fine. And the team's stacked. I really should be doing better some weeks. So yeah, they can, but it's not like I'm expecting Baker Mayfield to finally round that corner and become Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes. It's just the up's not there.
Yeah, I guess the news really in Cleveland from this week was that they released Odell Beckham. So you know, kind of when you're thinking about this team going forward, you almost wonder whether they have enough weapons to make Baker that fantasy relevant, although I mean, it's not like Odell was doing a lot before, so maybe it's not that big a difference.
And there's a symbiosis between, or however you say that word, between weapons and quarterback, which is difficult to read.
Yeah.
I think he's actually got well above average weapons. And he's fine. He's fine. But I don't think the weapons are an excuse, or vice versa for that matter. Like, the weird thing about Odell is, like, I don't think the physical talent went anywhere because I don't believe magic exists. But and all the stuff we hear about, despite how much noise gets made, like, it sounds oddly pathetic to me. Like, he kicked a net one time. His dad said something mean on Twitter about his quarterback. It's like, who's being the immature one here? But there's so much smoke. At some point, you've got to imagine, I mean, something's going on, but everything we hear about seems immature and irrelevant. You know, it doesn't seem. So at this point, I'm starting to believe there has to be more that I don't know what it is, but I do not believe the physical talent went anywhere because they don't look magic.
So I do think that, like, from the physical side, the only thing that I would say is he did have an ACL tear about a year ago. He does have a couple of shoulder issues this year. So he's not what he was when he came into the league. But to that point, he started his career off so, so strong and then just sort of faded away. And a lot of people blame this on, like, Eli Manning possibly regressing and then having to switch teams and everything else. That it's hard to forget that he's been in the league, 7 years now? And we haven't seen the version of Odell back at his, like, you know, first 2 years ever since. And that to me is a bigger indictment on like, maybe we saw his actual career peak early and then, like, he's still who he is, should still be in the league, shouldn't be treated as a, you know, top 24 wide receiver or whatever, but he's still good, you know?
I think that's a good way of looking at it. And I'm trying to say the same thing. Like, I mean, it's just too ultimately, all I know to do is to chase volume, and he's been persistently unable to accrue volume. And then that's what I really care about. It's not like he's doing badly on volume. It's not like he's getting too little volume. It's just, it's not impressive. Just from a pure volume perspective, and you know, you can talk about how much Baker doesn't or does target him, but that's the thing. This is where we backfill narratives, which leads us to make worse decisions elsewhere. And I'm just trying to avoid that. It's like, trying to fill the gap with injury information, maybe, but I don't know. And Allen Robinson isn't injured, and we've seen a similar kind of difficulty, but he has done okay at accruing that volume, except for this year where Darnell Mooney seems to be the one doing it because he's awesome too. So, I mean, all I know to do is chase the things that still have signal, and the volume is lacking. And I have never blamed a quarterback for that before, so I'm not going to blame Baker either. It's something else. And it's probably just time to listen to it. Having said that, I mean, I don't. I keep getting asked, you know, do you buy, sell, or hold? And it's all about the value. It's about the offer right now, as it always is. And it's just a matter of, I don't know many third round picks I believe could get 10% of an offense, and he can at least do that. So, you know, it's fallen, but he's still worth most of the trades that I see go down.
Yeah, Odell is just a guy that you're going to have to. Like you said, third round, right? That's what the buyer you want. A seller's never going to move him for that.
Yeah,
I mean, part of what makes the eval on Odell a little difficult, and you're talking about, like, the accruing volume, is they only had 21 pass attempts today, and the defense did a good job putting points on the board. Jubb did a damn good job putting points on the board. Right. You know, like, you're not going to throw the ball a lot. I think Baker is above average as a quarterback. He's helped. Remember when David Njoku was supposed to be a thing? Well, he's actually a thing now.
Kind of. I love it.
He's actually a thing now in his fifth year. And it's just sort of like.
Well, whenever Jarvis Landry's healthy, he kind of looks like Jarvis Landry. He gets 25% plus of the targets and does pretty well on him. It's
weird, right? Like, I think Baker, when you go back to really what sunk this team from where we thought they'd be to where they are now, was that Odell trade. Like, they gave up so much in exchange for Odell that it never worked out for either team, unfortunately. And that's sort of where a lot of this, like, poor residual feelings are coming from on, like, all sides.
Yeah, I mean, they just kind of blew all that capital believing they could pick that. It's like, that wasn't the point of it.
Yeah, that wasn't the point.
It's awkward.
And then they dismantled the offensive line too. Like, just like everything they did, like, essentially made Baker Mayfield a worse, put him in a worse situation. And then they hired Freddie Kitchens, and just a baffling series of decisions.
And they locked themselves into it. That's the thing. It's not like Baker was a bad pick or this Odell was a bad, but by trading everything and spending everything, it's like you're now locked into it. Now, if it's not great, you're screwed again. You're rebuilding again. And that's where they left themselves. They're fine. Yeah. They're a decent team. It's fine.
Yeah, they definitely were a little bit too short-sighted, not really taking into account how good the Ravens were going to be. That was really their issue and their biggest concern. I mean, today the Bengals were complete. I mean, they were bad. They were manhandled. Like they threw up the white flag. Brandon Allen, I think was like played out most of the fourth quarter there for them. Meanwhile, there's another quarterback who the team should have actually benched, and his name is Dak Prescott, who completed only 19 of 39 passes for 232 yards. Those two touchdowns he threw, they came in the garbagest of garbage time to someone called Malik Turner, two of them to Malik Turner. So Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb were on the bench, but Dak Prescott was out there playing with like the second and third string. And this is your starting quarterback. Like, I guess my questions are, has Mike McCarthy lost the plot?
did he have the plot at some point? No, I mean, Mike McCarthy's, he's like the Baker Mayfield of coaching. He's fine. I don't see any reason to think that he's not, doesn't know more about football than fucking me, at least, but pardon me. He doesn't give you an edge or nothing. It doesn't seem, and he makes some weird decisions sometimes, you know? It's fine.
Yeah, this was a weird game for sure.
Thing I did when I read this was I went and checked the league that I had him in. I was like, oh, he's over 20 points. It's fine. Like, that's my reference point. It's like, the points are there, and the squad's awesome. I'm always suspicious. Like, the NFL hates people with no draft capital. Like, it actively works against them. I thought he was past that point, but maybe not. I'm just going to shut up and let you talk.
No, I mean, I don't really have anything more to add. I just think, Dallas was dealing with a lot of injuries this week. I don't know how much that played into them underperforming.
Everyone was hurt, man. Zeke, and like everyone. I did think Amari tends to play through injury. He does tough it through. I don't know.
I like all these players as a thing. If there's a meh feeling on them, I'd buy Dak Prescott in a super flex in a heartbeat. Zeke too, especially with that age discount. Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, like line them up. I'm not scared of any of them if that's relevant.
I love Amari. Like I don't think like people say he gets hurt a lot and everything, and it's like he also plays through it. Like he's like the weirdest guy. Like you see him like grabbing his hamstring. It's like a grade two hamstring tear, and he wants to get back in the game, and he plays through it. Like he's a tough player, man. Like I think people are they have a really bad. I think it's because of that one year when he was with the Raiders, where he went so early and he just couldn't get it together. But the people have just soured on him.
Yeah, I think it's Amari Cooper's so weird in Dynasty. Like he's one of the there's this coincidental trope, I guess, that since 2014, the wide receiver one in Dynasty ADP has basically failed every time, except for Jamar Chase and Amari Cooper. Like those are the two that we got right. And yet he feels like a disappointment because he wasn't Jamar Chase. Like he's so far above average as far as what we get out of the but it wasn't that special funny feeling that gives us all the fuzzies. And he's just continued to be that. And then at some point Gruden just decided, I'm just going to intentionally not target him. He got traded, proved that was a Gruden thing, not an Amari Cooper thing. He's so weird in Dynasty, but I don't have I was just re-ranking Dynasty players, like starting to think of the offseason, and I put CeeDee Lamb as my wide receiver one, and it's a little bit of a hack because I've got Chase and Jefferson right next to him in the exact same tier, and I literally in my notes, it's just to set someone's hair on fire. But one of the reasons I'm so utterly convinced of CeeDee Lamb isn't just a prospect profile, the overall production, it's doing that with Amari Cooper. Like if there's a chink in your armor and you've got an Amari Cooper on your team, it shows up. Like if you can't accrue volume in a good situation, then it really shows up. And if you've got Amari Cooper on your team and they're basically dividing the offense and Michael Gallup occasionally, there's no more questions for me. If you know what I mean, he's that good. He's in that tier. I guess that's the best compliment I can give Amari Cooper. He convinces me CeeDee Lamb is that good. You know, like same with Chase and T. Higgins. To be fair, like if they weren't good, they wouldn't do this together, especially. Yeah. Especially with Boyd on the team, you know. Sorry, I'm just talking.
Oh, no, poor Boyd, man. No, you're totally
Boyd,
fine.
I love
Boyd. It's a shame watching him, like, just watching him run behind CJ Uzoma. That's such a shame.
I just traded him, too.
and it's like he's not even, like, bad, you know? Like, no, Boyd's really good.
Like, above league.
That's a good question, though. I mean, like, how worried are you about Boyd after, especially after this game, two targets?
I mean, he's that player that falls into that certain special area of dynasty ranks where I just paid a second for him and I feel great about it, but I don't know why. It's like, I don't doubt T. Higgins. I don't doubt Jamar Chase. I don't know how, but I know I've got this thing, right? Like, this is a good player. We spent so long trying to find him. It's like Jarvis Landry, it's like Michael Gallup and Darnell Mooney. It's like these are good players. We're just hoping the rest of the source comes together somehow. So I'm not hoping for injuries for Chase or Higgins, but I mean, he proved last week. I mean, he can still have great games, have a consistent role, very much a flex player. So that's where I'm at on Boyd. I think he's just going to be a value, and I think he's better than most dice rolls you'll get for a second round pick for sure.
Boyd's also, he, correct me if I'm wrong, but he might be a free agent after the season.
He can play that game too. I mean, maybe go somewhere.
the only reason I bring that game up is because he's got the kind of talent profile and is the kind of player wherein you can see him getting overpaid in free agency to go somewhere else. And I think he'll be just fine. Right.
Just fine.
There's a certain team in Wisconsin that could use a compliment to Devontae Adams. And they have plenty of cap space. Like just saying.
He'd be much better than anything else they've got outside of Adams, obviously.
So it's just like one of those, like, you only, like, and you only paid a second for that. And to give you someone tried offering me a 2023 third for Tyler Boyd a few weeks ago. And I had a back and forth with them, like a pretty polite one. Mm-hmm. But like the whole time I was just like, I don't need to explain this to you.
you know
what you were doing.
Why don't you just give me Boyd for free?
Yeah, and I get it, but yeah, everyone in that conversation understands it's like, I'm trying to buy way too cheap because really, realistically, how can you think he's worth any more? But at the same time, we both know he is.
And this is Dynasty, where you own these players until the league is over or you quit.
I know what's going to happen.
I think he's going to be a good player for a very long time. I don't know.
I also, I mean, it's really interesting season at time to be thinking like that, because we've just had two really good draft classes. Like, I think we really quickly forget how bad draft classes can be.
Yeah.
Like really quickly.
This draft class is proving it.
And at this point, second round picks have value in dynasty trades. And even like last year, after just one good class, they were still, everyone remembered they were basically nothing. But like right now, everyone's like, oh, I'm going to go get the next great guy. It's like, I think you're already starting to see it dry up at quarterback. Like Trevor Lawrence is an amazing prospect. Like this is an amazing college prospect having a really decent rookie season. And we're like, yeah, but Justin Herbert was so much more fun. It's like, yeah, you do not get that a lot, guys. Yeah. Like, that's your role. We've got like 5 really young, really good quarterbacks. And like, that's a lot. Like, you think you're going to get one every draft or something? Like, we were just discussing Baker Mayfield. I've got Marcus Mariota on the back of taxi squads in so many places. Yeah. Like, that's normal, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jameis Winston just fouled out for another team, you know? I mean, that's the QB, that's a QB1 in a good draft
year.
I mean, Mike White, baby, like, he is the QB1 in this last
year. There you go.
I think I was joking with Kevin Cole of PFF about this, about Trey Lance being the sixth string running back for the San Francisco 49ers because they just don't seem to play him. To your point, just about like how shallow draft classes tend to be, I just think that there was like a pre-narrative about how good this class is, or theoretically was supposed to be. That everyone's turning around and trying to shoehorn in all the marginal prospects into an elite tier, right?
Right.
But people were very quick to be down on Justin Jefferson. And there's no way to walk that back. Right? You know, walking out, you were publicly against Justin Jefferson, the prospect, and he comes out and he just like crushes, and it's like, oh, maybe he just exceeded expectations, and like the other draft classes are going to be better. And it's like, it doesn't work that way, man. Like, you get like Jamar Chase, and you get Rashad Bateman, and you get like a bunch of trash. Sorry, like that's just how it goes.
Fair enough. Like, I like Elijah Moore and Rondell Moore, yeah, and they're doing pretty good. I'm really happy.
They're both really good. Yeah,
but like, it's not that. Yeah. You know,
I mean, Christian Kirk is out there doing things.
Yeah, Christian Kirk was a really good prospect. Like, that level of prospect, that's what we've got. I mean, yeah. I've been really impressed with Devontae, so many Devontae Smith. I thought that was Jalen Waddle's
really good too.
Yeah, I thought Smith was a little bit more of a riskier profile that I liked, and I'm really encouraged. I'm like, okay, struggling a little bit. Catching balls is not what you do in that offense very much right now, but he's doing most of it, and really pretty impressed. It feels like everyone's really excited about the young players, and yet I keep looking up and it's like, but it's Cooper Kupp and it's Ezekiel Elliott. Like, this is team old guy just winning leagues, and we're all like, young guys.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Actually, it comes down a little bit to like a concept of philosophy, right? So like Blair and I built teams very similarly. Except Blair's a little bit more patient than I am.
I'm really impatient.
Yeah. So Blair, do you mind actually talking a little bit about some like the team that we were just discussing before we actually went live, the one that you've got a bunch of incredibly top heavy guys and then you own everybody else's picks?
I mean, yeah. It's just more of an experiment, right? To try and punt year one and load up on rookie talent. And I was able to get like draft Jamar Jefferson in the start. No, sorry, not Jamar. Justin in the startup, get a bunch of these rookies in the startup and get a lot of picks for this year. So Jamar Chase, Judy's on my team. I think I can't even remember, but I mean, yeah, you can load up on these young guys and sometimes it works. That team is not successful yet though. Like I'm still middle of the pack in that team, even with the young guys. So,
the highs are high though, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun to build teams that way, but it doesn't always work for sure.
I felt it both ways. Like I've had a really young team and I've been looking at like, why aren't I not winning? I'm hitting so many good young players. And then I've had so many old players and also like, what am I going to do now? My team's not winning this year. I'm third, fourth place. I gave up all my value to get here. And, but that's, I don't know. I think you do have to be on the extremes. Like, because I don't know. I mean, not in your league is a constant phrase, but I think winning, the chance of winning is so overrated. It's like it's 1 in 12, essentially. And then you've got to help all the pieces fit together. Like, I'm not trying to, like, victory lap here, but, like, I got some serious good calls this year, and my teams are losing like ass. Like most of my teams, like my one good team is only because I've just gone screw it. I sold Elijah Moore, I sold all my first round picks, I sold all my good young players, and I'm like, I want to try and win somewhere. So and that's the reason it's competitive. Bought Lamar Jackson because Aaron Rodgers went out, just why not? But like I got like the extreme value high upside calls, right, is what I'm saying. Like, and I do not do that every year, despite like really trying my best too. But like, I got Deebo Samuels, Marcus Brown, Cooper Kupp, and Daryl Henderson. Like these high, like if you got them all in the right place at the right time, like that's a really, like you should be trying to win this year.
Yeah.
But none of my teams have all of that together. And that's with me being like, I think I was in the minority on most of those takes and still not being able to put all the pieces together. Now again, you're probably whoever's listening like, well, that's because you suck. Probably. But I do know, no, even when you get like so much right, it can just not quite mesh for your team. And that coupled with a 1 in 12 chance, coupled with injuries, like if you got a chance to win, just go freaking win. And your team kind of should always be in the extreme. That's why building is a thing. You shouldn't be afraid to go to the extreme and then be like, okay, now I have to recover because like if you have that middle of the road team, your chances are still 1 in 12. But I just don't understand not trying to capitalize on any potential. Like if you're at 50-60% all play, just go try and win. Because you, even when you get all the right players, Christian McCaffrey goes down, Saquon Barkley goes down, whatever it is, and like suddenly you're not competitive that year. Like King Henry. I mean, if you got King Henry right this year, you were looking like you were going to steamroll to the end. And now, crap. Like, I mean, so like if you'd have capitalized, though, gone like, screw it, I'll trade this first, that first, I'll trade this young player, and gotten a few other running backs. Or I mean, I don't know, I'm just kind of going off right now because it's not as easy or as hard to win as we make it seem sometimes. If you know what I mean?
No, I agree with you. And I think some of it is just comes down to psychological fear, being unable to overcome that, right? So like with Cooper Kupp, it's a really good example of this, where he was out and then he kind of struggled. Like he tore his ACL and he had a down season last year. Mm-hmm. And it was like the Robert Woods show. But like you could just tell, like by the end of the season, like when like Kupp was right, oh, the end is here for Woods. I knew that like by like week what, like 6 or 7 of last year, and I just did not sell Woods.
Right,
stupid move, right? Mm-hmm. Robbie Anderson, another guy who I should have sold, but the wheels fell off. I should have moved Odell Beckham, like after he moved to the Browns, then he had that torn ACL. I should have moved him for something because now I've got all these guys in the same team, and that team is 0-7. I'm going to 0-8. Sorry, 0-8. I'm winning my first game this week.
Hey man, that's a good team compared to some of mine.
Yeah, it's just like what am I doing with it? Because I've got nothing, right? Like it's like my best running back is Melvin Gordon and Carlos Hyde. Like what? Like where is this team going? And I like it's got Jamar Chase, so like I got that going, but no one's gonna pay me for any of these old dusty veterans like Julio or Marvin Jones.
If they're winning and if they need, you can trade way below value during the. But yeah,
the guys who are winning are all like winning with young players, man. Like it's just, it's like one of those leagues where like all the young guys are all like on the good teams. Like it's one of those leagues that have become a little stagnant because of the like how the talent discrepancy is between the winners and the losers. If that makes sense,
I know that one where. 10 of the teams just have to all realize together we all need to go radical because those two or three teams are just going to keep and it's hard to get consensus around that. Most people think, I'll just draft a great rookie.
No. It just doesn't work that way, man.
It doesn't. I don't hate because it's part of the fun of Dynasty, but when you get into that situation where I need six of these terrible teams and I'm one of them to realize we're terrible. We just need to shake shit up. Let's give all our good old guys to this one team and all our picks to this team. Just shake it up. And like most people want just – and it's understandable because I do it. They just want to play your team, just want to add incrementally and maybe do – you don't want to blow everything. And you just got to go extreme almost all the time.
Yeah.
And you are reminding me, like the teams that I feel most bitter, like I've made mistakes here. Things have been done. I need to be held accountable. Is where, like, all of those players you just mentioned, I still like at value. But that's the phrase that I'm starting to target for myself. It's like, if I have too many players that I love because I think they're undervalued, then they're no longer undervalued because I roster them. Like, if all those guys I have a higher value on than everyone else, that just means my team's dead because I can't trade them away because I like them more. And I can't keep them because I'm not winning with them. So, I mean, and that's when I end up killing a team and realize, well, not killing a team, but it's like, okay, I have to forget what me, you know, like Robbie Anderson. I love Robbie Anderson, but I got to trade for whatever someone's willing to give me because if I have too many of those players, like then they're not undervalued at all because one guy who's willing to think that has them. And if you know what I mean, that's when I know, like I've got, Russ Fisher at Dynasty Outhouse, he runs a bunch of leagues called the Trade Addicts Leagues. And I kind of went nuts because it was called Trade Addicts and I try and get better at trades. And that team just stinks. But it's because every player on that I think is deeply undervalued. But that means they're all dead on my roster, man. And so I've just had to get into this mentality. And some leagues I have to just pretend almost like I don't think what I think. It's like time just to reshuffle everything, you know?
Yeah. It's one of the hardest things I think in Dynasty, not only to like not get locked into your takes, but also to realize, you know, in order to avoid these types of situations where your team is old, not even necessarily old, well, your team, you have guys that aren't worth as much as you think they should be. You have to trade players that you like way earlier than you want to, and that's difficult, but
and for way less than you think. Like you see someone just traded a first for Robbie Anderson, why can't I find that trade? It's like just
it's just not gonna happen, right? Like
that's not your league. You know, you just I mean just move on.
I will say, I don't know if this is a symptom of Twitter recently or is just by me choosing to unfollow a lot of accounts, but I don't see a lot of people rushing out to post trades on the timeline anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So I haven't seen a lot of those like lopsided, one-sided trades, right? Like I just haven't seen many of those polls come by. I haven't been, I don't know if it's me self-selecting out or what.
I get tagged in a lot, but I tend to avoid them. Like, I don't get much from trade polls. I don't get it. Like, this side won, and that seems like the logical side. I mean, I don't... Like, I like it. Like, John Bosch, he's actually FF John Bosch now, and he's just starting his, like, trade value podcast up again with a few other cool people for the DCC Dynasty Trade Calculator folks, and it should be really interesting because he's kind of got... He thinks in game theory. Honestly, think his brain just works that way, I guess, is what... And so he always has an interesting take on the value of players. And what was I going to say there? I completely forget. I was just plugging their podcast, apparently. No, value is a really slippery concept, and you can get way too locked into it, I think was my overall point.
I agree with that. And the other thing about like trading is it's a skill, right? It's an actual genuine skill to understand why you need to do what you need to do and why you need to do it. And then also that, yes, I cannot get one-to-one for this. Mm-hmm. So this is just how it's going to, this is just how it is going to have to be. And like the only way to honestly get better at trading is to keep making trades. This goes back to a lot of stuff that we here do at RotoViz, and kind of goes back to some of the old stuff from 2015, Blair, like with Sean and Charlie and those guys talking about how you want to be the guy at the table who's always making trades, because you suddenly become the guy other people come to when they want to make a trade, because you're seen as a willing trade partner. You want to establish yourself as that. Yeah. And that is huge. That's huge. To develop a reputation as someone who is easy to trade with and you're not going to haggle over very minor points, then it's like... Right. You found someone you can actually deal with, right? Like, whereas there's a guy who offered me a 2023 third and expected me to counter for it. And like, that's like a discussion that's not, I'm not going to say it's not worth having. It's just like the values are so far apart that I'm not going to start this negotiation pegging to something that's just that wide. Sorry, we're not getting anchored to a value that you think is appropriate for a player that, you know, that I'm not, that I have actual genuine value use for, and I want to hold on for this season and beyond, right? Like, it's just one of those things. And I think that, you know, to your point, Peter, you want to make trades, man. Like, that's the only way to get over the fear of losing them, because you're going to lose a lot of trades. That's just the way it goes.
There's some really interesting, and again, everything depends on who's in your league, which is a weird thing about trying to give generic advice about a very specific situation. But there is a momentum in my experience. Like, if you start making trades because a few get accepted, suddenly you just seem to be trading every day. And you're like, what's going on? I'm not this guy. I'm not Russ Fish. But there does seem to be a momentum where you make one trade and the other one somehow comes more easily. And I think it is... Because everyone's like me, you get a trade email and like, I want to trade. And so it just greases the wheels a little bit. Not even that the value's easier, just people are, I don't know. I found myself do it. Like, you see a few trades go off and then you see one that's pretty close and you're like, accept. And it does seem to just grease the wheels. It's also just, for that reason, good to have active people in your league. And if you're not the guy who can or likes to trade a lot, have someone who is. Because if you get those emails regularly, if there's always turnover. And speaking of that league disparity you were talking about, like, a league dies if there isn't an ability for that to happen. And if there's once it becomes that, it's very clear who the top three teams are. If there isn't a lot of movement, then it just stays there. And everyone's tired of just getting beat. So they leave, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, those active people are like gold, I think, honestly. In a dynasty league, I know. I always, like with RotoViz, you're always looking for trends and data and trying to do player evaluation. I've boiled it basically all back to what happens most often, just so I know where to bet, because so much is luck and chance in real life, you know? From injuries just to they're just not feeling it that game, or we got something deeply wrong. I feel more comfortable boiling it back to there. And it's just, and that goes back to trades as well. Like, it's going to be a really interesting off season where the age of the best running backs in the league. Like, I think anyone's ranks and you average them is slowly increasing. Not that it's too old, but you've got CMC, Barkley, and they're just getting older. And Nick Chubb, who's been a top 12 running back and it looks like he's going to do it twice, Kareem Hunt. And it's not that they're old, but since 2015 or so, the age has been decreasing as those young guys came into the league. And now it's starting to increase again. But that still doesn't mean they're not the best running backs in the league, and everyone's scared of holding the bag. Yeah. You've got to look at your team and decide. I've been focused on these extremes so much. Maybe I'm going, and I do like to think, because I just want a simple plan of action. Again, boil it back, just tell me yes or no. So I'm going too far with it. But I do think it's best to look at your team and just decide which direction you're going to go until you can winning or value. And then until you can go the other direction and then sell all out for it. And looking this offseason, you should know that the best production players are going to be older and cheaper, and the best value players are going to be younger and much more expensive than they've been in a while. And you've got to decide which way you want to go with that.
Yeah. To that point, I did want to actually say, I was talking about this with Blair before we went live. Someone offered me Saquon Barkley for Travis Etienne and a first on my side.
Yeah, you know.
That's optimistic, but I should add, this team was dead on arrival because it's a super flex team. And one of my two quarterbacks on that squad, one of them is Deshaun Watson. I'm accidentally winning games because the core is very strong. Like, it's like when you have Dalvin Cook and Nyheim Hines and DeAndre Swift and James Robinson and Devontae Adams and Justin Jefferson, you're going to win games. That's just as an accident.
Right.
You know, but I'm doing it without Etienne. I'm doing it without Deshaun Watson. I'm not a contender. Without Deshaun, I'm not a contender in Superflex. It's just the way it goes. But, I mean, my start, I've only been playing one quarterback in a two quarterback league, basically.
Hey, you can do that.
I mean, that's the sort of trade that, if you're the guy who's trying to get rid of Saquon,
yeah,
I mean,
you're going to be taking the L there. Like, it's just not going to happen, man.
I don't know if you would be able to get it done, but I think that's a trade that I would try to get for Saquon all day.
Oh yeah, you can try for it, right? But like, how often is the ETN guy going to also move? Well, I guess maybe if I was contending, but I'm not. Right, that's the issue. I'm like accidentally. I
mean, even so, Saquon's
not helping. That's what I was going to say. That's both sides might hate the value on that trade, and it purely team situation, you go for it, right? Like, if you're winning, damn it, but yeah, sure, let's go. And if you're losing, it's like, damn it, but sure, let's go.
Yeah.
And those are the it's difficult.
Yeah, my losses in that league have been really just sort of like, when I come up against a true contending team, because it's a 16-team league, So when I come up against a contending team, it's like, oh, I'm not losing by like a handful of points. I'm losing by like 80. I'm like 25 points away. It's like I'm a whole quarterback and a bunch of guys away. Like, it's just one of those, like, it's just how it works out, because teams in this league take your tack where they're very extreme in the buying. Or they're very extreme when they go to sell. So you get these in-season super teams almost that eventually roll off into becoming non-super teams as they go off into the, you know, as the off-season starts up. Because then it's like, oh, I've all of my players are worth nothing.
But then, like, the season starts back up again. It's like, oh,
yeah. It's just one of those things. It's really interesting.
I think it might be because it's almost impossible to do. It's kind of the missing element of dynasty rebuilds and strategy. It's like you have to break down your league. Go look at your role play. Is the winning team winning 80% of all games? Then you're probably dead no matter how good your squad is. Like that, because they're winning by 80 points a game. It's like you can't build your way out of that. You know, unless they suffer injuries, no one winning. So, and like, even in a competitive squad with the right players and you're like, oh, I'm competitive this year. Like, the top team's just too good. They hit too many fires this year. And they'll cool down and they won't be winning by 80 points next year, but this year you probably did. And it's, yeah, you got to break down your own league, and there's no real way of doing, like, therefore trade for Saquon Barkley takes on that without that context.
It's just not right. Like, it's just in a vacuum, sure, why not? But like,
So I just
pulled up that that league, and I am losing by exactly 80 points right now.
Oh wow!
There you go.
This other team has completely doubled my score.
Nice.
Huh. No, I ran into Jonathan Taylor and Cordarrelle Patterson and Justin Herbert and Matt Ryan.
Cordarrelle Patterson is like a top eight running back in points per game right now, and that's including the three that are out with injury and dumb for the year.
Yeah,
like,
buddy.
And someone was asking me last week who I think the top three running backs were going forward, and I said Swift. Who else did I say shit? Swift, Kamara, and Harris. Najee Harris. And I did it basically just by expected points per share. Yeah. So the role in their offense and then their expected points per game. Like, again, just go for the most volume, most secure volume, and move from there. And someone was asking me about Jonathan Taylor after his big week. And I was like, he's there on points per game, but his volume's just a little less valuable because he's doing it more with rushing attempts with targets. But while I was filtering, I was like, oh, no, screw it, I'm wrong. Cordarrelle Patterson is a top three running back this year. Like, that's how I got it wrong. Speaking to your note.
We were ahead of the curve there on waivers.
Yeah, I'm never going to get the weird. And I love the underdog, but weird is just... No, the NFL seems to hate weird. Like, it actively, like, if I swear, like, Curtis Samuel could be something in this league. Debo is, but they could really have some weird hybrid players that, like, do amazing things. And they seem to, like, oh, that's icky. That's not what my granddad did. And so I just avoid it, you know?
Yeah.
But Patterson, well, you know, how are the Bears the ones to figure out the thing that everyone's saying Patterson could do? Just put the ball in his hands and he's great. And like, he's been through the Patriots, and like, they didn't figure it out, but the Bears are the ones who are like, oh yeah, running back, and they're the ones that figure it out. How? Sorry, you were gonna
say that. I mean, it's interesting, like, you know, you're doing a lot of dynasty and prospect evaluation, and these guys like Samuel don't fit into the profiles that we like.
LaVisca Chenault, he's someone I don't think is bad. He's kind of a little weird, so I'm like, nah. And also, he's on the Jaguars. It's really easy to fade Jaguar wide receivers. Like, they just seem to hate their own wide receivers.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I want to actually talk about one game since you brought up Debo Samuel. This was a This 49ers game was one where we saw Ayuk finally outplay Samuel.
Did he go?
Right. I mean, he scored a touchdown. He had 89 yards to Samuel's 63. This was, I think, going in, maybe everyone except for you thought that Ayuk was going to be the guy here.
There were a few of us. And not to take the victory lap, but like, I listened to... honestly, people that, because I didn't know what to make of Debo. He's a little weird. I wasn't that high on him as a prospect. Then his volume came up in that. I was like, that's more than I thought. And so you take a reconsideration. And so I started, Zach Reed from the Dynasty Dummies podcast, he's the one who calmed me down on it for this offseason. He's like, no, he's that good. It's okay. I was like, okay, I believe it. Yeah. But we're on an island. And that's why I say, did he outplay him this year? Like, I hate to lead into confirmation bias, but so far what I thought was the situation this offseason explains everything I've seen so far, and nothing else does. Like, I figured when Debo is healthy, he gets this high volume role on the team. The offense loves going through the middle. They love George Kittle. They love Debo. When Samuel was out, Brandon Ayuk's ADOT dropped more into a Debo-like role, and he did amazing with it. So but not quite as good as Samuel. So my entire hypothesis was Samuel gets that role. That's where most of the volume runs. Yeah. And is slightly, because he's slightly better at it with Ayuk, but Ayuk is still a good player. That was it. And this week, like, Deebo Samuel was injured, not fully expected to play, and the team didn't really expect to use him. And Ayuk is the guy with the most volume. Like, that's
right.
And every other game he hasn't been. Like, that's it was still actually fits, Kittle. Right? Well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Kittle.
But that's I mean, the thing. So, it's Kittle and Deebo. Kittle and Deebo. It'd make a great detective show.
But I mean, that's sort of been the case this year has just been either Deebo eats or Kittle and Ayuk eat. It's not been Kittle and Deebo. It's either it's been fair. Deebo by himself or it's been Kittle and Ayuk, because like we haven't seen this out of like Kittle for a while. Ayuk was just, I mean, just, again, it's just purely because of happenstance in the game. I think Deebo as a weird prospect is good. Because Blair and I had a long conversation about an adjusted breakout age for Deebo. Because there is another world where he was an early declare prospect. Right? Like there is a world where he doesn't break his leg his sophomore year.
Right.
And he leaves in his junior year. And he breaks out, like he hits that 30% threshold that we want in his sophomore year.
And that world, we are more right. I like that world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just one of those situations. I was more on Kittle this offseason than either of the wide receivers.
That's what I was going to say. I've done so much like, Samuel victory lapping. I forget. Yeah. I was saying, just get George Kittle. Just get George Kittle was my thing.
He's the guy that go to over the middle. And this year has really, if anything, it's really made me reevaluate Kittle as a player, how we talk about him. Like just the fact that he probably shouldn't be above, you know, guys like Hawkinson and Andrews and Waller and Pitts, and you know, like he should not be in that tier. Like he really falls more in the tier of like maybe even Fant should be ahead of him. There's a world where Kittle should not be like drafted too early. Like he just sinks teams, man. And today I got a chance to look at my ROI shift in best ball after one good Kittle season. And I am petrified. I am petrified at how important Kittle is. Between me eating beans under the bridge or me eating steaks every night, man. Like there's in between.
I'm a little worried about your the amount of finances you have in fantasy football right now.
Yeah, I know. But it's all on George Kittle. Like this one man and what he does week to week, like defines
me.
Like my ROI went from like it went from you know maybe just barely above break even to 120% like after that game, and I was like, this is not good. This is not good. Yeah. He should not account for this much.
So he's been dealing with injuries a lot, especially over the last month. But I mean, do you see this? This game is kind of like a turning point for Kittle, or you're just, this is not enough. You're kind of giving up.
Me?
Anyone?
Yeah, no, it's for you.
Yeah, I think the volume was there before the injury and just not quite the production. I was going to ask you, are you worried about his yards after the catch? But actually, you're worried about his ROI. So that's slightly different.
Yeah,
but
no, I'm
like kind of an efficiency player, but I do think the volume was there. The team was working into a new season. Anyway, I just know to chase the touches, and Kittle kind of always gets them. But there is a slight yards after the catch nature to the way he produces, which is weird. But, you know, Mike Gesicki does it like a wide receiver. So I'll take it, I guess.
I should add that Deebo Samuel saw the most targets again today. He wasn't as efficient, though. So both Ayuk and Kittle like, kind of really outperformed on the efficiency column. But Debo's still seeing the most highest target share. I mean, like, of the four or so wide receivers who have a target share above 30, I think it's, like, Kupp, Adams, Deebo, and DJ Moore, and that's it.
Yeah. That must have changed late, because the last time I checked it, he did get 9 targets versus 8 and 8 by the end of it. But like for the majority of the game, he didn't seem to be.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it just feels like the 49ers came in expecting, no. It's like Colt McCoy under center, no DeAndre Hopkins, and then they get completely destroyed.
Doesn't really matter.
I mean,
the Cardinals are so stacked this year. Like,
they, like. the Niners have lost four games at home, including one to Colt McCoy.
Oh my God, that's like the ending of a sad movie. It's just a hopeful face of the San Francisco 49ers. Like, we got a chance this week, boys. Hopkins is out. They're down to James Conner. Let's go. And then just a train comes through.
Oh my God. And Eno Benjamin came to life. He ruined some poor defender's life today. Yeah. He stiff armed some defender like into the dirt, like into it, like they dug a new grave around him. It was I don't know if you guys have had a chance to see this, but I genuinely recommend you should go check this out. Finally the Eno Benjamin thesis is coming true.
Yeah.
And what do you think, you know, draft capital, by the time this offseason, I'm guessing Khalil Herbert and Mitchell.
Khalil Herbert!
Is dead. But, like, I can't help but, like, in a cheap James Robinson way, like, they've both been really good. They don't get forgotten, right? Especially in the 49ers, it's basically just the next man up until you get injured. You know? Do you think he holds some sort of role for next year? I know that's a little too far out to see, but
Mitchell, you mean?
Yeah, Mitchell or Khalil. Yeah. But I think both have been impressive enough.
I think. I think so. I'm sorry, Blair. We've just been proponents for James Robinson for some time. It was a real shame to see the Jaguars draft ETN with the first round.
That was so painful. No
that
idea.
Was just like, that was
talking
just like,
about
what
my
are you
ROI
doing?
Thing.
Yeah, I know, right? But we've seen this before, right? We've seen this movie play out before, and this was the Chris Carson movie.
Yeah, right? It just turned like that was after they drafted him. I was like, I guess if he's Rashad Penny, I can't see that in his stats. But if he is, then we're fine. And it just turns out he gets injured. Sorry, carry on, dude.
It's just one of those things. I'll forever remember that offseason where Sean was just like, just draft Chris Carson, guys. Like, what are you doing chasing Rashad Penny? And it was just like, I guess that makes sense. I mean, we were just like, and he was taking Chris Carson everywhere. And then we saw it play out with James Robinson and ETN. We're going to see it. We just saw it play out with Eli Mitchell and Trey Sermon.
All right.
I was a big Khalil Herbert guy this offseason, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't think I caught him. I like Carter. I like Mitchell above average. I don't think I really even noticed Khalil. But, yeah, he's been impressive.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, what's interesting, I think with San Francisco, Mitchell probably has a little more staying power than you saw with guys like Robinson or Philip Lindsay's the other guy that really comes to mind. He was like my favorite running back in that class. And shame to see him get overtaken. But I mean, with Mitchell, since he was what, their sixth round pick after they took Sermon, and Sermon for the most part has been healthy this year, and he's still not getting in the game. So plus they were Mostert, of course, was what, was he undrafted or was he like a fifth round pick or something? I can't remember.
Mostert Mostert was like a fifth round or sixth round, but he was like around forever. Like, he's just been a special teams guy forever.
Yeah.
Shanny just wanted him on his team, and he took him from the Falcons to the Niners. And him and Cordell Patterson have a lot of similarities.
Interesting.
Yeah. They're the same guy.
I mean, 49ers seem to not care as much about draft capital with their running backs. So
I was going to say, do you think there's an edge to, like, on the few teams where we have a history, like Shanahan just don't care about your draft capital on running backs. Like, if you're not as good, you don't play. Whereas some teams are just going to try and force it. Like, I think the Jaguars would have tried to force it. If ETN hadn't suffered an injury, I think this would have been nasty at the watch.
They would have forced it. So, like, the thing with, like, Mostert is, when you go back to how he got the opportunity, I think it was like Joe Williams flopping, and then a couple of guys getting hurt.
Yeah,
you also knew that the Niners were interested in his continued success because they kept him on and actually gave him a pretty hefty extension, despite him being like a situational special teams player and missing most of his season with like a broken leg. And like you could tell that they had an interest in him, but like the second they gave him opportunity, he was able to just sort of crush with it. Because he was never he never saw regular playing time. And it's the same with like Cordarrelle Patterson. We've seen him as like a special teams guy. We've rarely seen him get this kind of he's never get this kind of usage. But also think about what it took for him to get here. The Falcons had to trade away Julio Jones. Their next best receivers had to be like Russell Gage and Olamide Zaccheaus and like Tajay Sharpe. And then on top of that, they had decided to make Mike Davis their feature back, who was like this plodding, this like dirt of a human. And then Calvin Ridley is dealing with like some personal issues, right? So it's just like, who gives us the best chance to win? And it's like, well, all right, see back.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mike Davis
slander, man. That was hard to hit.
I know.
The man right? accrues volume unless Cordarrelle Patterson is a random.
Yeah.
he does. Mike Davis this year?
Were you drafting him with the four five turn?
Not in the 4-5. He seemed to go a little later than that. Yeah. He was going well outside the top 12. And when you go so heavy wide receiver more often than not, I was like, I mean, he was a top 12 running back last year. I mean, a pretty shitty top 12 running back, but a top 12 running back. So, I ended up with him a fair amount. Yeah. And honestly, the volume was fine. Like, he was a top 12 volume player the first 5 weeks. And it was like, what's going on? And then finally, like last week, the team was like, let's stop pretending. Let's just give it to Cordarrelle Patterson. Finally releasing me from my curse.
Yeah.
Don't have to talk about Mike Davis regression anymore.
When you say you mostly want to just chase the touches and chase the volume, but there are some of these guys like Mike Davis, and I mean, there are others who are like, they're just, the efficiency is just always so bad that it's hard to really feel good about the volume. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't drafting Mike Davis, but
I wasn't doing it. But hey, Pete, I'm not here to judge. No, I get you. No, the way I knew to let him slip and get him if he was of value was like, and I don't look at efficiency much. If it's not predictive, I don't look at it enough, to be honest. But like, I just compare seasons, and his like RB12 season last year, like the points per game on it were like the lowest points per game an RB12 has had in like 5 years. I see. I see what's going on here. That's how I got out of DJ Chark real early as well. Like his wide receiver 24 season was like shit. Like it wasn't a wide receiver 24 season in any other year. Just that one year. And I mean, it's not high analysis, and I guess I might be just getting luggy, but that's helped me out a few times. I should have known better.
Looking at the fantasy points, and they're not there. So
they're what like, the hell? Where were you this offseason?
I'm right here, man. I've been panning DJ Chark for years. Like, if you haven't heard me, you've been trying not to hear it.
Oh my God, and he's banning my teams.
Oh, sorry. And I don't dislike the player, to be fair, just in terms of fan. Again, I mostly default to the, if there's a successful wide receiver on the Jaguars, they're going to actively work against that. That's my hypothesis. Like, it was Allen Robinson, and then they got rid of him. Then it was Keelan Cole for a second, and then they got, like, whatever happened to him. And, well, he's actually doing pretty well with the Jets right now. And then DJ Chark sparked up, and then it wasn't him next year. It's LaVisca Chenault. Now it's not LaVisca Chenault. It's, like, they just recycle.
It seems Jamal Agnew. Good God.
It's Dan Arnold.
Damn, that was Dan Arnold. Yeah.
All right. That's a good note to end on. Thanks again to our guest, Peter Howard. You already kind of plugged everything you were doing at the top, but got anything else going on this season that viewers, listeners can check out?
I plugged in the protest. Check out DLF. I'm writing weekly articles for them, or just at me on Twitter anytime. I love to talk about football most of the time. So I really appreciate you asking me on. Sorry I took us way off the show sheet there. I just want you to know,
good, man.
They've got some really interesting notes here, and I just kept us away from all of those. appreciate it, guys.
Thank more fun show this way.
Yeah, this was, I think, an awesome, awesome discussion, and one that everyone is going to enjoy. So, really cool. Thanks again for coming on. For Hassan Rahim, I'm Blair Andrews. Thank you for watching.